You're listening to the Higher Calling Podcast. I'm Pete Newsom, and my guest today is Kate O'Neill. Kate's a co-founder and CEO of Teaming, a team intelligence software platform for managers to help them build healthy, high-performing teams at work. Kate, welcome. How are you today?
I'm so good, Pete. Thank you so much for having me. How are you?
Well, thank you for joining. I've been trying to get you on for a while now.
Well, I appreciate your patience. You know, I said this backstage, but I love the content you all are doing, and I'm excited for our conversation.
Well, it's a small world. It's really neat to connect, because we met Matt on LinkedIn, and then you posted something that led me to meet someone else, Josh Hammond. So we'll have to make sure Josh watches this. And Josh and I have become friends since then. We're friends on Facebook now. We've met in person. We're talking about doing some things together professionally. It's really a cool way to use LinkedIn. So thank you for that.
I love that. That warms me up. That's awesome. My real human connection is what I hope for. So it's really cool to see that it's moving beyond just connections with me. So that's awesome. Tell Josh I said hi.
There's a lot of interesting things on LinkedIn. I'm not sure if you're a Reddit user, but we talk a lot on internally about the LinkedIn Lunatics subreddit. So if you haven't discovered it yet.
There's one on Twitter. Gosh, I'll have to find what the handle is and send it to you. But it's basically like, it's calling people out in posts, being like, this isn't a real story.
Nice.
Like, yeah, it's great.
Well, that's a problem though with LinkedIn right now, where I know these aren't real stories, and I won't name names, but there's huge accounts and they make these stories and they're selling their service, and you can't, I don't begrudge anyone doing that. But I just want to say, come on, like this is awful. And being in staffing at times, it's even worse, because we see the advice that gets the most likes and shares and comments is stuff that would get someone fired on the spot. No one should be recommending it.
It's bad content. It's bad advice. Yeah, but it's dramatic. So people, it catches people's eye and they're like, ooh, or it's so heartwarming that people don't realize that it's not real, which I don't know. If you're doing that kind of stuff, it's just for likes and clicks and not for real connections. So I always take that with a grain of salt and say, well, I don't think anything meaningful will lead from it, but maybe.
But it works. I mean, that's the struggle that I have. I don't know if you do as well, but it's a struggle between posting. I just can't sell out to that point. Now, I will confess, I've started posting some memes on LinkedIn, and you know what? I'm embarrassed to say that gets way more interaction and engagement than our serious stuff.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about TikTok before we started recording. Our biggest TikTok video, I mean, we put out career advice all day, every day. Our most viral video, 3 million views, I think, the last time I looked.
Wow.
It was a little boy pushing over his sister, like with a funny comment about like Monday, how Monday feels or something like that. I'm like, oh, what has happened in my life?
Well, I mean, look, if that stuff is crushing, right? And the stuff that's like serious, it's a balance, right? The person who engaged with the brother and sister, now they'll actually see the real content and that will start to do better and better, right? So it's like, it's sugar and vegetables.
That's right.
So I like it. Yeah.
That's our justification, right? It's brand recognition. It works. So we'll keep doing it. And I it's snowing in the background where you are, and you're only in Tennessee. That's amazing.
We are probably 7 or 8 inches in, and doesn't look like there's an end in sight today. It's only not quite 2 PM. And then apparently it's going to snow again on Thursday and Friday. So yeah, we're getting dumped on.
How unusual is that? I mean, for where you are?
I think this has happened maybe 2 other times, and I moved here in 2019, so less than once a year for sure.
Wow, I'm envious. I'm in Florida.
I'm envious because I could use some beach time.
Well, yeah, but it's too cold to go to the beach, but it's too warm to really enjoy the winter. It's done now. I would trade. If you ever want to trade, we'll have to talk about that.
Let's do it. I gotta come down to meet you and Josh. So
yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, we'll plan on it. So tell me about your career leading up to Teaming, because that's when you founded Teaming, right?
Yep.
Is that what brought you to Nashville?
It sort of. I met my co-founders I met at our previous company. It was called LeanKit. It did really large scale project management and process management for really large enterprises. And I was their head of marketing, and then our former CEO, our former CIO, and our former head of engineering all got together after that company sold and said, we want to get the gang back together again. And we saw the opportunity for Teaming while at our previous company. So I actually knew when I took the job, I was living in Atlanta at the time, and I knew that they were a venture-backed company and they would sell in, you know, call it 3 to 4 years tops. And so I didn't want to sell my house in Atlanta. So I commuted up to Nashville for a few years. Monday morning, I'd leave Thursday night. I took most Fridays off. Don't tell anyone. And so that company sold within 3 years. And I was like, great. I didn't sell my house, but I did what I wanted to do career-wise. It was a great opportunity for me. But then when I loved the team and we said, let's start teaming, it was like, all right, I got to make the move now because this is going to be a 10-year thing at least. So I made the move about 6 months before the pandemic.
Didn't see that coming, obviously. Yeah.
No. So I didn't have to move, I guess, but I'm really glad I did. I love Nashville. I still get back to Atlanta all the time. My family's there. It's 3 hours and 15 minutes or so from door to door for me. And I was there last weekend, quick weekend trip. And so it's nice to be in a place I love to live, but close enough to family where I can see them just a car ride away.
Nice. That's a good distance.
You
don't want to get too close. That's good. Now, so how did COVID affect you guys? You started this business, you had plans, and then boom, the world starts to fall apart around you.
Yeah. And what stinks is, like, you know, you would think that rise in remote work, it did increase demand for tools like teaming, but we were just starting to write code for it. And so we weren't there to capitalize on it, which stinks. Okay. but it actually was great in the sense that I don't know how much you follow like the funding industry tech market, but you know, a lot of money got pumped into companies like ours.
I do. Yes. Yes.
We stayed nimble and scrappy and we took on a little bit of angel money, but we didn't go out and try to raise, you know, gobs of money at an unreasonable valuation. And so those businesses, a lot of them haven't met their scale needs, right, to the money that they took in at that time. And so they've gone out of business.
It's happening a lot lately.
Yeah. And knock on wood here, we've survived. So that's been really helpful. You know, it was hard, right? Everyone's taking all this money. This, you know, it's like the golden age of SaaS startup and people are like, well, you're not doing that too. And so that was a hard moment.
But if you can get away with not doing that, what a home run.
Exactly.
That's a win.
You keep the ownership, you know, so that's, you know, I'm happy where that ended up. It was kind of hard. But, and the other thing that was hard is, like, you know, if you've done this where you're trying to understand or achieve product market fit, but the market keeps changing. The world moved so fast. We're remote. Well, are we going back? I'm not sure. You know, like now this hybrid thing, the world around us, the social things that were going on during that time, all of that affected people managers in a different way at a different time. And so we felt like it was a little bit of whack-a-mole to try to understand the problem that they were facing because it kept changing. So that was really hard. I think we've now narrowed in on how to really help managers, and we've really started to see some nice growth there. So
that's awesome.
So that's been, yeah. It's worked out.
Let's go back. Let's go backwards in a little bit. What was the original premise for teaming? How did it come to be?
Good question. So as I mentioned, we were a project management software company, you know, our last company that sold. And that company, you know, when we would go in to work with, call it like almost every corporate worker at Walmart used our software then. And we would go to teams and understand, how are we making you work faster? Because that was the promise of the software, is, you know, we can help you have better processes so that you can deliver work faster. And we would see, like, we're measuring their work. So we can see, you know, Walmart's 3% more efficient. That's millions and millions of dollars to their bottom line. But when you went and talked to the teams, they didn't feel faster. And you're like, well, walk me through that a little bit. And we realized we weren't doing anything about what the most important part of our capacity or our speed to deliver work, which is our attitude, our engagement at work. And our old software did none of that. In fact, it took away a little bit from our engagement because it made people feel a little bit like a number, like, you know, okay, I'm just this machine to go do work, which, you know, we're here to work, but because it was so, you know, anyone could do this or every team is doing this in the same way. So what's special about how we're doing it? If it's not me, someone else could do this job. No problem. It made them feel a little bit under. So we said, all right, these are human problems. And so that's, you know, where we said, all right, this is what teaming is going to focus on is how do we help managers and their teams create the environment they want to work in, that they can deliver work fast in, that they can increase their capacity to do work. And so that's what teaming does.
That is an incredibly large challenge,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, in a big statement for you to make. I mean, because I can tell you, having owned a business now for 18 years and wanting nothing more. When I started the company, I founded the business to be the company I couldn't find as an employee. And that meant a number of different things to me, but I found that what I wanted wasn't necessarily what everyone else wanted over the years as we started to grow. And I found that to probably be my biggest limiter over the years. Part of that is I'm a career salesperson. I'm someone who was comfortable enough with my skill set and abilities to start a business. I had the right drive and motivation and work ethic and all those things just have to be in place. And I had the right idea, thought I could execute on it. But that's an entirely different skill set than managing a team. I've come to realize to a painful degree at times. And that is something that I will tell you 18 years in, I've not been able to solve. And I want everyone to like what they're doing. I want everyone to feel included and to be happy, but that's an incredibly difficult thing. And so, okay, you've decided we can solve this.
Yes.
How do you go about doing it? Where do you start?
Yeah, good question. Well, one, I think you are not alone in that. People feel that very much. I mean, when you think about when you became a manager for the first time, right? Or maybe it's when you're owning your own business, but even still, like you are now a manager. Most people don't think about that, right? If you're a salesperson, you think about the craft of sales, which does involve people, right? So it can get a little like, you know, close, but you don't really think about, I need to learn a new profession when I'm a manager, right?
Perfect way to put it.
There is this stigma out there too, that we should just be good at this, right? Because we're either a natural leader, like, oh, you know, Pete's got natural leadership skills, so he should just know how to do this. Or we think we're a bad person if we're not a good manager, right? Or like, that this is a reflection of who we are as people rather than as our skills. And that's like that's one misconception I try to get out right in front, is management is its own distinct profession with its unique skills that have nothing to do with your functional area of expertise, number one. And number two, they are skills, just like anything is a skill, right? Yes, you can have natural inclinations to be a good leader. There are things about our identity and our personality that make, you know, one leader maybe better suited or better to start as a leader. But if you don't continue to nurture those things and become an expert in them, become a learner of those things, you're not going to get better over time.
And right? I think you'd agree with this, but I don't believe anyone's intentionally bad at it.
Exactly.
They are bad. And I think now more than ever, employees have higher expectations on their manager. They're more critical outwardly, publicly at times, as we've probably all seen over the past week with this video that this young lady who was being fired or terminated from her software job. Have you seen it?
No.
You haven't seen this?
All right. No, I gotta see it.
I'm gonna move on from it though. But she recorded herself being laid off. Oh. And it's been pretty viral over the past week. And the criticism that comes out, you know, for just as vitriol aimed at the employer, it is so quick to happen now. And I always think, well, no one is intentionally being awful, right? So that's a huge problem. We know it's a problem. I'm part of the problem. God knows that. So where do you go from there? I mean, how do you even begin to tackle that? Okay, because that's just insurmountable, it seems to me.
Also, reframe a little bit about, you know, you might solve one problem at one time and then use that same approach for another very similar problem at a different time. And it's a different time. And that, right? So the world is changing around you as you're trying to navigate these things, like, you know, communication or having hard conversations, the things that managers need to do, like firing someone, right? There are just ways that you learn how to do these things that I think are good, just first principles of management that some managers know, some don't. A lot of companies don't teach them, so then they don't know. So that's sort of like layer one. Okay, what are the first principles of management? Layer two is, how can we help people to do these things faster? So that's where teaming, well, I would say we do both, which is, teaming is a software platform where you do your work. So we are in your meetings. I don't have it in here, but like, it's an assistant that joins every meeting for you and takes meeting notes, right? So you can stay engaged in the conversation. You can really be nice. Active listening, right? All the things that we know are important. And so we're automating, like, where we can, we are automating things for particularly managers, because that's usually where it starts, right? Where they're setting the tone, they're setting the what's behaviors acceptable, what's not, how we're going to communicate, what are our team norms going to be, right? So there's a lot of help from teaming to the manager, but the team member is also included, right? They are also using teaming in their meetings. And we say, okay, we're going to automate what we can, and then we're going to coach directly each person based on their communication styles and preferences. So if you think about an algorithm, right, or training a piece of software to me, right, let's say you are my manager, right, and you have a very specific communication style, and it is opposite of mine, we Yes. are much more likely to butt heads because we communicate differently. There are also cultural things, right? We're from different areas of the country. We, you know, you're a man, I'm a woman, right? Like the those things can be just, we're different people. Yeah. Yeah, all the above. And so we say, okay, teaming is going to learn about both these people, about how they're communicating in the meetings. So it's not just taking notes, it's learning how we communicate, and then offers very tailored coaching about what topics were communicated really well based on our communication styles and what could be improved. So I like to use this as an example. Let's say you're a high, like, let's keep this high level, and I'm a details person. I got to know the deal. Let's start with the details, and then let's work our way to the big picture. That is like two really hard ways to come into a conversation, but it happens all the time.
Yes.
I will get coaching on the times, these very specific topics, you know, Project Twitter or Project Glass, whatever, where I kept it high level. And you appreciated that because it's what you were looking for in the status update from me. And then conversely, I'll get, hey, you know, in this instance, when you talked about, you know, project matches, you know, you really dove into the details and you didn't need to, because it wasn't what Pete was looking for. And then vice versa, right? Where I might need help with something, or I don't know something that I maybe should know, or it's a different expectation of me that's new, and I don't know what to do. You'll get coaching very specific to me that says, hey, when Kate was doing this new thing, you let her dive into the details and ask you lots of different detailed questions. And that was great for her because she learned how to do the thing that she's going to be able to not dive into the details with you again afterwards, right?
Okay.
So it's okay. Very specifically honed in on first management, like first principles as managers, right? Your responsibility, my responsibility, you know, how we do career stuff, goal setting, all that. And then we layer on top of that how you're communicating. Let's learn exactly how to make your communication better, more effective over time.
I mean, it sounds too good to be true. Okay. Because I can say it really resonates with me because of what I admitted to you already, is that this is not my strength. And I'll tell you a story in a minute of how not my strength it really is. But what are you in assessing and interpreting and reading to be able to offer that feedback? How does, I mean, just not, a, don't get too technical with it because yeah. It'll go over my head, but how does that work?
Have you ever taken a DISC assessment or Myers-Briggs?
Yes.
So we start with the DISC. You sign up okay. for teaming, you take a DISC assessment. We okay. use that as your, call it your natural style and your general style. And then we know because we're in the meetings with you, we know when you're presenting that style and when you're not. Because like when you're getting fired, for instance, that's an adrenaline, you know, it's a really uncomfortable situation, right? It's different than your natural style, right? So we know the content and the context of a meeting. And, you know, basically what is the standard deviation of your communication off of your like natural, general, any given day type of communication?
And then, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then same for me, right? And we kind of see where the building blocks fit and where they don't fit.
That makes sense. So when you say we're talking AI,
yes,
right? Teaming
yes.
is an AI. I,
yes.
I know it's not you looking over our shoulder, but what about a scenario where, which I think this applies to my internal team. I think most teams. Now we used to give DISC assessments, people, and we tried to hire based on those, but we kind of threw it out the window because we realized just because you fall into one category doesn't mean you can't be good. People can have different strengths and weaknesses, and if they apply them the right way, they can be equally effective, right? So we don't do it anymore, but we did it. So I lived that for a while. But
yes.
Having lived that, I can tell you that some people on our team have very different styles. So while mine may apply a certain way, how it's going to be interpreted is going to differ if in a group conversation. So how do you reconcile that?
That's so interesting you say that. So that's where the real power of AI comes in, because our brains can't grok that, right? Like I can't understand when you are presenting this way or when you're not, right? Machines can do that for us. And I should blanket this all with sort of a warning, which is this is new, right? We don't know what the feedback we're getting back from this is, like, wow, this is so me, right? And that's when you think about the history of things like DISC, Myers-Briggs, StrengthsFinder, Enneagram, all that stuff. They're just frameworks that our human minds came up with. They're not based on science, really, right? And so the how good is this thing, right? This framework is basically what we make of it. DISC has been around for 100 years because people think that I did identify that is me, and we continue to share it with each other and ask each other to take assessments like this to better understand and know each other, which is a basic human need, and to be known by other people, right? To have better communication, to do these things. But it's still the stone tablet version, really, right? All of those assessments are that. Now with AI, right, we can actually attribute the DISC attributes to the actual communication, to the context, right? Am I being fired right now? Am I being promoted right now? Am I talking to a peer or a boss? Am I talking to a direct report, right? Like, what are the power dynamics? All that stuff can be fed into a machine to understand and to package it together to know whether or not the DISC or the Myers-Briggs or whatever is actually true of us, and in what situations are they true with which people, right? And so we will layer over, and in the app you can see it's very basic right now. It's just the DISC, where we'll show you who you are as individuals, and then we'll show you what are your combined strengths. So Kate and Pete together, what are the things they're really good at together, and what are the things that they need work on? And what's really interesting to me is we gravitate towards people who are like us, who communicate like us.
Sure.
And that's because it's easier, right? It's easier to communicate the way someone, when you have a common way of communicating, it just feels easier to us. But what's interesting is that two similar people have the biggest blind spots in the way that they communicate, the way they behave, the way they innovate, the way they have creative ideas, right? So yes, it's easier, but in the same time, you're more limited with what you're going to be able to do together often. And the AI, in 5 years, we'll be having this conversation. We will know, what the truth of these things, but it's what we early see, right? Is that two similar people will gravitate towards each other at first, but have struggles to break out of or to do different things or to communicate in different ways that are necessary sometimes with the context. Now, the reverse is true for two very opposite people, right, who have opposite communication styles. It's going to be harder at first, but when they're able to learn and to grow together, it can be a really fruitful. They can do different things, explore different areas, have more creative ideas together, appreciate each other's strengths and blind spots, because it's usually, you know, compensating for the other, right? Like we appreciate each other. It's easier to appreciate the differences. So I don't know if that answers your question, but
no, it does. And it makes sense, complete sense. If two people are, you know, have the exact same perspective on everything, that doesn't account for how they're communicating externally to anyone else. So they may get along, you know, fabulously, but as they're trying to share their message to anyone else that doesn't fall in line with their perspectives, it's going to be, they're going to miss out on a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I think that where machines also come in, which we're just about to release this tomorrow. I cannot wait to see what the feedback
is. All right,
hot
off the press.
Yeah. So we now will analyze all, like, let's say this is a one-on-one. You're my manager. I have a weekly or biweekly one-on-one with you to go through, you know, how are we progressing towards our goals? Am I performing? You know, what do you need to know from me about the work? Those kinds of things that we talk about in one-on-ones. We will now analyze the series, the one-on-one series, and say, hey, to you, we'll say, hey, you know, here's a list of suggested topics for your next one-on-one. And they are based on topics that never came to resolution in your recent one-on-ones, right? We will show you why that is important based on my communication style. Let's say I brought up the fact that I don't have very detailed career goals once. 3 months ago. That could mean a lot to me, but I didn't bring it up. I only brought it up once and it didn't come to resolution. And it's not my style to bring it up again, right?
Okay.
Teaming will now tell you, hey, this is important, or it's likely important to Kate. Maybe you should bring it up again. And then we'll also remind you of the context from your last conversation. Where did you leave the conversation? So you can pick up with it where you left off, right? Hey,
this sounds amazing, really. And I didn't know much about, you know, teaming before this conversation right now. And I'm thinking of so many applications for it in my own situation and what has limited me as a manager. And one employee in particular comes to mind where, you know, great employee, there's so much good, but there's just a conflict always under the surface, it seems, when we communicate with each other. Right. Where mm-hmm. I say something, it sounds one way coming from me, but I know it's interpreted a different way consistently. Yep. And it's frustrating. And I know it's frustrating for this individual as well. Right. Because I don't think I should have that reaction. Like I thought this was going to be something you'd like to hear. And clearly body language, tone, you can read how well the message is delivered, but it doesn't necessarily mean you can do something about it. And I think that's been such a limitation for me and so many others. I don't think my plight in this is that much of an anomaly where I mean well, mm-hmm. but the delivery is, you know, now if someone is aligned with me, the delivery is great, right? Here it is, few words, boom, we're off and running. But that's limiting. You can't scale that way as a business. And I can guarantee that is limited our growth over the years.
Look, yeah, I mean, I, you know, we started out this, how do you solve this problem? Sometimes it can't be solved, right? Sometimes it's just where we are in life or what we have going on or whatever the case may be, right? And sometimes it is that with a hard employee. You know, you can lead someone to water, but you can't make them drink, kind of thing. But we can make sure that we're doing we can now understand at a deeper level those people and understand that we are doing everything we can to make that person a success. And that's how I rest at night. I don't know about you, but like, hey, I've done everything I can do. This person can either, you know, come to it and want to work here, see the career progression they could have, see the, you know, potential money they could make, whatever their motivations are, which teaming will help you to know, right? You know, sometimes it's just not going to work out, but I think we can make a way better impact on employee turnover. And we're seeing it to create
those
really one-on-one great connections. Yeah.
I can point to the time where the world shifted, the societal shift kicked in, generational shift is probably the better way to put it, where what had allowed us to grow up until that point, what I was taught, what I believed to be all that was necessary as far as opportunity that was presented to employees, an employee resigned because he wanted to pursue his passion. And the passion was going to pay significantly less. And it was a road that had nothing to do with the one we were on. And I looked at him like he was crazy for resigning, for walking away from a significant income to one that wasn't nearly as good, it not going to lead to the same kind of path. And that was 2014. And not long after that, I didn't know what I was seeing at the time. But looking back, that was the beginning of a big shift in generational perspectives and what was important. And what I, as it kind of alluded to earlier, what I thought I needed to provide as an employer, what I wanted as an employee was no longer enough. And now employees expect so much more than I did coming out of school. And that once that is ingrained, it doesn't really change, I don't think, right? So now we have a generation who graduated or is coming into their professional life at a time where they could be work from wherever you want. I mean, while I'm a fan of that, well, it's hard to go backwards, right? That genie's hard to put back in the bottle. And so many young professionals now came out of school at a time where it was an employee's market to a degree that I haven't seen in the 30 years since I graduated from college. Well, boy, talk about setting your perspective, in a dangerous way, because now that pendulum has swung back a little bit. It's not so much an employee's market anymore. And so it's struggle. So there's all these things that my age is hard to contend with and see their perspective, but it's absolutely necessary. So as you're talking, I'm thinking, what a solution for the modern time that we're in.
Well, look, the perspective you have, right, of the last 30 years is an important one, but even take it out further, right? This is the first time in human history where teams have been as diverse as they are. It's the first time in human history where remote work is a possibility at all. Right. It's the first time in human history where we have four generations in the workplace, right? It was like one or two at best.
Right.
Now it's three or four. And, that's sort of like age diversity, right? But it makes those common human connections where we see people who are similar to us, where we do communicate really easily, right? Which is an important part of our working world and our community and all that, as is, connecting with others, but you see less of that. And so the responsibility of making sure that the team creates the connections necessary for healthy, high performance is harder. It's just harder than it's ever been for all of those.
Oh, by the way, at a time where we don't interact with each other outside of business. We don't see each other in the hall, walking in the parking lot at lunch, all those things. Right. This is it. This is all you get. And the limited feedback that comes with me. That's something that I'm trying to watch 15 people at once on Zoom to see how a statement, is received. Yeah. Right? Which is nearly impossible.
The other thing that our last company worked with a lot is work is become less structured as well. So we talk about agile. You're probably familiar with this agile transformation, right?
Worse.
30 years ago, I felt this way 15 years ago where I worked in the marketing department. I talked to other marketers all day and I did marketing work. And fast forward just 10 years and it's like, I spend most of my time with salespeople, customer success people, IT tech developer people to deliver marketing projects, right? Because that's the world we live in now. And so we're not even speaking the same common functional language with most of the people we work with. And then finally, the way that we've progressed in our career changes too. So we used to have very hierarchical organizations where you got pathed, I got promoted, I went up this way. Now it's it's continuing this trend to be way more horizontal where our ability to influence people and to sell our idea or help to inspire people to work on the project that we're doing, those skills become so like more important than ever because there's not a clear path. The path is pivots on the mountain rather than a straight line.
Yes.
And so,
absolutely.
So a young, I feel so bad for a young person because there's no playbook anymore. No?
Well, because that's how Zengig came to be. Mm-hmm. And we talked a little bit about that. Now we're talking about, you know, we're here through, you know, in this podcast because of Four Corner Resources, the staffing company that I'm president of, but we launched Zengig, and the reason why it's a Z in the because it's a winding path. So our original logo,
love it,
which we couldn't really make work to come to agreement on. You're a marketing person, you know how this goes, but we loved the premise of a winding path because that is so true. What people go to school for, and I won't go down this road right now. Whether they should go to school, whether they need to,
I'm with you.
And there is no great source for finding those answers. And then when you're out in the real world, it's even worse because now you're there alone and you have bills to pay and responsibilities and you have to figure all this out. And it's a mess, right? And so if you don't feel, I mean, as you're talking, I get it. I mean, I hate that so many people who've worked for us over the years have not felt that, you know, that they could just be open with us and communicate with us and connect. It's probably been the hardest thing for me to overcome. And even though it's been 18 years since I started my own business, was feeling like the emperor with no clothes, like because I'm the last to know if someone's upset or bothered by something. And we've made policy changes and procedures. I mean, you have to put this stuff in place as you grow as an organization. Even though I didn't want to at first, I wanted to be free and not let policy and procedure ever slow us down. I still think we do that, but we have to have some structure. And to find out that people, you know, were so upset by these changes, but just there was no mechanism by which they could communicate. And it sounds like you're helping solve a lot of these problems, which I think is so necessary and important.
It's just hard to navigate work these days, right? Like we'll use the power of AI to help with human connection, right? Automate the things we can automate so that we can focus on communicating well, connecting well, and using a machine to help me better understand people just makes sense, right? And what I love so much about when I see new users of teaming is that everything's private, right? So you'll see, you know, the feedback about your own communication with me just to you, right? No one else can see that. But what happens, which I love, is that they'll share it with each other and say, was this right? Like, is this, you know, is this how you felt? Wow. Right. And that's the aha moment, right? That's when two people are taking the conversation offline outside of the machine to really use it as a connection point, right? To better understand each other. And that's what we're looking for at work, you know, or that's what we need, right? There is actual science on what is always true of a healthy, high performing team, no matter what team type it is, no matter how long you've been working together, whether you're co-located or remote, right? None of that matters. There's actual attributes of the way the group operates that are necessary to be healthy and high performing. And that's what we want to help teams to be able to focus on. It's the hard stuff. It's trust. It's accountability. It's, you know, commitment. It's focus, right? Shared focus. Those things are so hard to build. So let's, one, automate what we can so we can stay engaged in the human connection of things, and then use machines to help us understand where we're connecting and where we're not to be better, right? To do better. Man,
so true. So necessary. All right. I'm convinced anyone who's listening now would be, you could not be from this conversation. So where do we go? So someone's, you know, if we're interested in teaming, we want to learn more, want to use, you know, get started. Walk me through that.
Yeah, good question. So one, I'm always available. I try. We're a small team. This is still new, by the way. We're a pretty young company. There's still a lot of work we need to do. So I say that all with the caveat of, you know, work with us on it. It might not be I shouldn't say that. People have really great experience up front, but I try to really talk to everyone. So if you're interested in being a customer, send me a DM on LinkedIn. I'm always ready to either hop on a Zoom, walk you through it in a shared video, however you prefer to communicate, I'll do. But you can sign up on your own if you want to at teaming.com. You can sign up free. There's a 14-day free trial. If you need an extension on that, I know someone if you need more time with it. But yeah, you can kind of choose your own adventure when you sign up and you get to take your DISC assessment, you invite teaming into your meetings. It works in person too. So it works if you're going into a meeting room and you've got like the room reserved, we'll hook into the mic to in the room to actually do it in person if that's your style or that's how you're set up. So yeah, that's where it is. And the agenda thing's coming out tomorrow. So that'll be part of your free trial. Though it,
awesome.
It takes some time, right? We learn over time. So the longer you use it, the more smart it gets.
And that's AI, right? I mean, as someone who's used it almost daily for a little over a year now, the learning, the back and forth, the interaction is fascinating to watch. And we're just scratching the surface of where it's going.
Yeah. So I've got a question for you. And maybe this is the age old question. I don't know. I'm a little jealous of staffing companies.
Said no one ever.
I can't
wait to hear what's next.
Because hiring gets all the glory and the money and the excitement, right? Is that, right? Where, how do we find new people? How do we find the right people, right? It's the like new toy always in this industry, right? Versus, hey, how do we make it work with the people we've got?
Yeah. So I'm curious. So I can address that.
Yeah.
We are not in the retention business, but you'd be surprised at how many companies blame us as an industry, right? In a profession when the employee doesn't work out.
Yeah.
Despite that. And so you mentioned something a few minutes ago. You said that things aren't perfect yet. Well, things are never going to be perfect. And one of the things that I've said over the years to prospective clients is, don't think that working with us will eliminate problems. I guarantee you we'll have problems if we work together enough, because people, our product is people, right?
Yeah.
And so our product walks and talks and thinks and gets drunk on Sunday night and doesn't show up on Monday.
Yeah.
So we have that element, right? Your software is not going out partying tonight.
No, right? It's a good point.
In the morning.
It's a great point.
Well, ours has a spouse that is bad influence and has car problems and you name it, right?
Yep.
So there's that, but also we're the outsiders. Our relationships are best. So having been in this industry a long time, the hiring happens a whole lot of different ways. But what works well for us is where we're considered an extension of the organization we work with, and they really consider us a partner. And I don't mean that in the cliche way, because everyone says that, but where they see value in what we do. Mm. And you know that from your career too, where if you're just a vendor, that the second you make a mistake or do something wrong, or you're not valued, then there's no relationship at all. And it's really not healthy. And so, staffing could be great, but it can also be fraught with challenges, I'll just say. So don't be envious.
I was going to say, it's a really interesting perspective, because I haven't thought about that. Like you see all the amazing things that the tech and all the resources that go into staffing. And I don't think about the reverse of you get blamed too.
Interesting. So when I started, this is how old I am, in 1993, we didn't have Monster, Career Builder. The internet the internet existed thanks to Al Gore, but it wasn't a thing that you had on your desktop, and certainly not in the form it is today. So when I would post job ads, I would do it in newspaper, trade magazines. Resumes would be mailed and faxed to me. And I didn't know where the next candidate resume was going to come from, right? Where if I go on LinkedIn today, there's thousands and thousands. And so there's always another one to come. And so I didn't have to place as much value on that individual interaction and conversation. So when I had a resume, if I had your resume, Kate, it was like gold.
Yeah.
Because I may not have another one I may not have another person to call. So I wouldn't have to invest fully in that conversation. And it made me really good. I had to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so technology, this is a good example of where technology has made us not as good as we used to be. And so, I sound like the old guy saying that, and my team probably rolls their eyes when they hear it, but I'll back that up all day long, because you didn't have any other choice.
Yeah.
You couldn't rely on technology. And so it's a crutch, and it's a good one. I mean, I wouldn't trade it. I don't want to go backwards. It's made us more efficient. But anyone who's on LinkedIn today sees the complaints that happen. Candidates, frustrated. Yeah. They can't get an interview. Recruiters won't call them back. And it is impractical if you're a recruiter. If you have 1,000 applicants for a job, you're never going to see, number 101 to number 1,000. You're just never going to. So it's a weird system right now that we've created for recruiting.
That's a great perspective. Yeah, that's really interesting. I've never thought of it that way. And now that you say that, like, I think there's one executive recruiter that I've really enjoyed and actually trusted, right, to place me somewhere, whereas everything else has just been through my network because it's who you trust. Right. And there has to be a level of trust there on both sides for a recruiter. The company's got to trust you to find the right person, and the right person has to trust you to place them in the right environment. It's really hard work. And I absolutely see how technology can be a crutch in that.
It has become that, you know, with the need for efficiency and speed, where I would argue there's third parties now that exist to separate. They exist in between the hiring manager and the staffing companies.
Yeah.
And that sounds great on paper if you're the company saying, hey, you look how efficient this is. And by the way, we charge the staffing company for that service and your managers don't have to get involved. And I would reject that entirely. If I'm hiring for you, I have to hear from you. I have to know who you want, not just what you need. And if I'm doing my job well, I'm going to deliver one resume to you, and that's the person you're going to hire.
Yeah.
And so I will never recruit based on volume, even though that's become attractive so I could go on for days about that. You're getting more than you asked for with that question.
No, I'm glad. I'm of the mindset to, and maybe this is wrong to think this way, but hire slow, fire fast. You know, you hiring slow, right, is really just like finding the right person is so important. And
That can go too far too. I saw the best post on LinkedIn an hour before we got on today. I'm going to try to get exactly. It said, if Alabama can replace the best coach in the history of college coaching in a day, ooh, how come it takes you so long to fill your accounting opening? And it was so perfect. I'm like, man, I wish I had written that. Because because to your point, like, I get it. You're like, I want to find the perfect person.
Yeah.
And I would argue there's no perfect, right? Yeah. There is no perfect person. So find the person that feels good. And I've been on that receiving end. I had a niche position. This was years ago. And there was one person in the state of Florida qualified for the role. I mean, and we delivered this person just by sheer luck and coincidence as much as anything else, finding him so quickly, but within a couple of days of being asked to fill this role. And the C-level person who we were recruiting for was so freaked out by that. She's like, I can't hire this person right away. And I'm like, why? She goes, because it's too fast. I'm like, but the person's perfect. And she's like, I know. But and so she couldn't come out with any words or phrases to justify it. But it was that uncertain feeling. And fortunately, it took a month to get her to convince her that there was no other candidate, because she said, well, send me more. I'm like,
there are no more.
And I'm not doing my job if I'm going to send you someone not as good as the one I've already sent. Right.
Yeah.
That doesn't reflect well on me. So it's, as you get into on the recruiter side of the table, you see a little bit of a different perspective, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. I want to comment on that Alabama post about, like, that's the perfect example of they retained their old coach for a very long time, and they did succession planning, I'm sure, right, with him as things, you know, they did the things with the people that they had really well, so that they could recruit really fast, you know?
No, but this new guy, I mean, do you know much? I don't know if you're a college football fan, they hired the guy who was sort of the hot, you know, new coach. He was the coach of Washington, and they just were in the, you know, championship game. And so he just bailed on Washington to go over there. And it just happened so fast. And thinking, replacing Nick Saban, you know, the arguably, you know, the winning, you know, best coach of all time. I don't know the stats. He's not the only good coach, but
very good.
I'm like, man, how can you replace this legend that quickly? And they did it. So it was such a good post on LinkedIn. I'm like, wish that was mine.
I love it.
Well, Kate, this has been, you've been so generous with your time. I'm going to put you on the spot with one more question. Actually, two. Well, let me ask you this one first. Team size. We didn't cover that. Is there a team that's too small or too big? No. Okay. Mm-hmm. So teams of any size, you want them, you can help them. So here's my put you on the spot question. I would love to have you back on and talk about your path as a co-founder with three other co-founders, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're the CEO, but that is a journey that I think a lot of people would be interested in, because that's a hard thing to navigate. That's a lot of chiefs.
Yeah.
Not everyone does that effectively. So I'd love to have that conversation too, because as I'm sure you know, having started your own business now, people say the same thing to you that they have to me for years. I want to do that. I want to go on my own. I want to, and there's pros and cons of that. There's pitfalls. It's not as rosy as some people think. So will you come back at some point and have that conversation?
I would absolutely love to. I'll say briefly, one of my co-founders is my old boss, and now technically he reports to me as, you know, like,
nice.
So we've switched seats, totally switched seats. So yeah, it is interesting. Yeah. I would love to talk about it. I never expected to do this. So yeah, I would love to chat about the path and how it came to be. And then lastly on team size, something that we talk about a lot in teaming, and which is we've architected teaming in such a way where the team is private. So like the most important thing between relationships and the group dynamic is trust, right? Do I trust this person and do I trust this group? And so there's no company view in teaming. There's no HR, no admin, no IT that can go in and see your stuff. And that is a massive change that's going to need to happen in enterprise software, right? Do we expect that, you know, can our whole family see our Instagram or our whole family see our Facebook, right? No, like it's your profile. It's your team. And so you can have a team of any size, but it's private to just the people on the team. Like people outside the team can't even see that the team exists when they sign up for teaming. And so that's something that is foundational, right? So it does change as group, like if it's a team of two, like me and you, it is going to be different because there isn't group dynamics at play. If there were 10 or 12 of us, that's different. Right. If there's 50 of us, that's different. 150 have you heard of Dunbar's number?
Oh,
it's like from the days of hunting and gathering where we can't know more than 150 people. And so when a company gets like at 148, everyone can know each other. At 151, impossible. You know, truly like it's that stark of a change. And so like that's a different, you know, you can have a team of 150 people. We have them, but the expectations and the dynamics are so different. You know, that's sort of like a technical answer, but also a philosophical answer that we try to help people to understand as they onboard in teaming, that especially when your team grows, the dynamic is going to change. There will be new challenges, and same with contracting, right? There are layoffs or whatever. The dynamic is going to change. There's going to be hard things to work through, but you'll do it together. And that's the good thing. And you'll have a private space to actually do that.
That's so important because employees need that outlet. They want that outlet. They go public when they don't have a private space to do it. And no one wins with that, right? Because it creates a bad scenario that currently exists. And you're solving that.
That's right.
That's huge.
We hope.
That's awesome. I love it. I think you are. So Kate, thank you. We're going to put all your contact information in the show notes. You're easy to find on LinkedIn, teaming.com. Couldn't be easier. I love the domain. You'll have to tell me later how you got that one.
I will. I will say also we are in the process of rebranding. So teaming.com will always go to our new domain, and we don't have that yet, but it will be different at some point. So I want to leave that out there just in case someone goes to teaming.com in the future and it's different. It's still us, but
all right. We'll be on standby to see it.
Yeah.
We look forward to it. And I'm excited to see everything you're going to do. And I'm now going to be talking to my CFO about how we start to become a customer too, because I think it just makes sense. So I'm convinced. And like I said earlier, everyone else has to be too after listening to this. So Kate, thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me, and I can't wait to come back.
You're committed. Awesome. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Bye.